Okay, so let's get started. This session is a discussion on black holes. It's a little difficult at the front with the lights shining on us to sort of see if somebody wants to participate. So please don't be shy, you know, wave around and ask for one of the cubes. But we'll start with the panel, but it would be good to get the odd person chipping in. We've had some great questions. I've tried to collate them into approximately four topics, but there's been some good ones on analogs. But I thought I would open it with sort of first of all thanking the director of the Institute for letting us have the workshop here, and then I'm going to pose him a question. Somebody would like to know a little bit.
I actually saw the recording yesterday, and after the first question, Matt introduced the panel.
Oh, that's true. We should start with that. Yeah. So I will start with introducing the panel by introducing our director, which is Rob Myers at the end. Except I can't, I'm terrible with names. I'm going to get you to introduce yourself. Sorry.
I'm Sabrina. I am very happy to be a new faculty at the Perimeter. And I'm probably the least qualified for this panel because I normally try to just assume that, like, I guess the S matrix is unitary and forget about, like, make the bulk work out. But I do flat space holography.
I'm Ian Moss. I do various things to do with quantum field theory and co-space-time, early universe, just very occasionally black holes. I'm usually the oldest person at the conference these days, but not today.
Ouch. That's right.
Microphone near Bill. Bill, microphone near the... We know who you are, but they won't be able to hear you without this.
All right. Yeah. My name is Bill Unruh. I work on... these days on analogs, various issues in quantum mechanics, quantum optics, relations between quantum optics and black holes, getting interested in LIGO once again, which I worked on a number 40 years ago now. Wow. Anyway, that's me.
I've got some good questions for you later, Bill, so don't worry.
All right.
I thought we would start with Rob. There's a question here just sort of asking a bit about how you can get black hole thermodynamics from quantum information. So I gather there's been quite a lot of recent work.
Well, there's been a lot of recent work. I'm not really sure where to frame that question. I will... start by saying that the place it's been most productive, I guess, is in the context of something called the ADS-CFT correspondence, where there's a proposed equivalence between a theory with gravity, where the black holes would live, and a theory without gravity. And one of the things we've learned is to apply all of the ideas and concepts of quantum, we've been learning to apply ideas and concepts from quantum information to that theory without gravity, and then trying to understand what it means about the gravity theory. And so, for example, today we're talking about black holes and black hole entropy, and you can relate that. On the one side, I have my usual quantum system. We have ideas like entanglement entropy, and we can see that corresponds to... or what on the bulk or on the gravity side, to the idea of black hole entropy, for example. That's just a sort of a small vignette, but that's the kind of thing that comes to mind. So I'm just going to stop there unless you have more specific.
Thank you. I'm looking for slightly unfair, but since you mentioned scatter. Scattering, no, just go for it. Do you think we will ever be able to learn about the black hole interior from outgoing radiation? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't know, and I feel like... I should defer it for this question, but I guess the point would be, like, if you think that the S matrix is unitary, then I'd say you're assuming so. Yeah, something about it at least.
Mm. So you really do feel that unitarity is absolutely fundamental.
I mean, for me, I think I'm more pragmatic about it in the sense of, like, if I want to be able to. I don't think I take it too much as like fundamental in principle, but into what I'm doing, it's a yes.
Mm.
That makes sense. Like building a framework up that's trying to reproduce things that would be unitary in the ADS context and then understand the flat limit of that, I'm probably accidentally assuming it somewhat in my framework. But that doesn't mean that I take it as a fundamental belief.
Okay. So now I will skip over to Bill, and it's really quite in the same theme. Do you think we could model black hole interiors in analog gravity?
It depends on what you mean by black hole interiors. Analog gravity, there is something going on inside the horizon. For example, if we think of Niagara Falls, well, actually you'd have to have a Niagara Falls be, I think it's 10,000 kilometers high to get a horizon forming as it falls down to Earth. But that's a minor technical problem. There's a bunch of rocks down at the bottom, and that's the sort of singularity. One of the problems with analog gravity is that some people want more from it than it can actually deliver. In particular, I hope you can hear me in the back.
Not very well.
You hold.
All right, I'll do it this way. They tend to want more from it. The fluid, the equations of motion of the motion of the fluid have nothing to do with general relativity. And so a lot of the questions that one would really like to have answered, for example, black hole entropy, etc., is there some way in which one can model that? Well, that relies really critically on the horizon being tied to the mass, for example, via Einstein's equations. And in an analog system, I can make the horizon anything I want just by putting appropriate forces on the fluid as it's flowing over the, as it's going supersonic. So it's not going to give any kind of an answer to the entropy problem. Similarly, the interior of black holes that we have in general relativity are really there because of Einstein's equations. And perhaps, you know, if one has matter as well, on the fact that most matter has positive energy density, and so light rays, two light rays that are traveling tend to get focused together. And once you fall into the black hole, they get focused down to zero. What happens after zero? No idea. There's no theory that really gives us any kind of faith that we have any idea what happens after you get down to densities of the Planck density or whatever. So it's really hard to know whether or not one could model something that one knows nothing about. And I don't know. Maybe somebody will come up with a really neat idea, you know, like my fish by Niagara Falls, that many of you have heard the story that I had to give a colloquium in Oxford in 1971, I think it was. And I was desperately trying to figure out how to explain black holes to an audience that more or less had never heard of them. In 1971, black holes were brand new things, you know. Nowadays, you ask any five-year-old and they'll tell you what black holes are. So the final answer is, I don't know.
Okay, Ian, let's hear from you. What is the future of black hole thermodynamics? So what's the goal? Let's have your perspective on that one.
I'm not quite the right person to ask about this. I know the study of black hole thermodynamics has got very much intertwined with things like string theory and holography, and that just sort of frayed its way over my head. I mean, I go back in time to, you know, to the earlier days when people looking at Hawking evaporation and that beautiful link between you know, the quantum theory of the evaporation of black holes and thermodynamics, which, well, the fact is that a black hole behaves like a black body, which was a tremendously unexpected thing at the time. I do remember part of this was, well, there's some concern about whether you could describe the entropy in terms of states. There's been a lot of progress on that, on the holography and formal field theory side. And then there was also these questions about the loss of information, because if the black hole evaporates away to leave nothing behind, that seems a little bit worrying in terms of what we normally think of as unitarity evolution in quantum mechanics. I do remember long ago, to try and face some of these questions head on, Stephen Hawking did try to produce a theory of non-unitary quantum mechanics that would somehow you know, allow for things like black hole evaporation in some kind of consistent way. Unfortunately, he sort of dropped that and moved on to other things. And I don't know whether that will ever be resurrected. Maybe if string theory sort of maybe fizzles out, we'll have to go back to some of these old ideas again. So that's a rather rambling.
Do you want to come back on that, Rob?
I have to say I'm delighted that I'm the youth of, or part of the youth of this panel. I think that when I heard the question, the first thing that came to mind is what are those microstates? And the string theorists, we've been good at counting very strange black hole or microstates for very strange black holes and strange numbers of dimensions with all sorts of quantum numbers or charges. But, you know, they're very simple black holes, like a Schwarzschild black hole. I don't think we really have much of insight into what's going on there at that microstate counting. So there are a lot of great questions that are still open. But even Sabrina might have some suggestions on where to go.
I know what you're going to lead into with the soft hair story, but I don't want to. Sorry. So basically, I guess the only thing that the reason why I could be on this panel is because so I study asymptotic symmetries. So basically, for me, it's more of an observer horizon. And like we're in this, say, space time where we pretend the cosmological constant is zero. And I look at what happens at infinity there. And then Hawking, right before he passed, was working with my advisor on trying to apply the question of like, what are the asymptotic symmetries of the horizon, or in some sense, and these near horizon symmetries. Nominally could give them some understanding of, I guess, the fact that you're kind of summing over very low energy excitations and accidentally and not measuring it. And this would give an area law if you knew how to kind of, like, I guess, fuzz out whatever is happening with the super translations at every direction along this horizon. And so I feel like people have made claims that way, but I would be very wary of saying that I could understand from the asymptotic point of view, unless I had a whole like set of multiple moments and like more symmetries, how I'm actually constructing something that would fall in. But there have been claims about like near horizon symmetries, and I think it's interesting to talk about to what extent when you're like modeling black hole evaporation, you kind of see the ring down, like are you accidentally in a certain BMS frame? I think there's fun things there with gravitational memory, but I'm not going to say that it solves the information paradox, no matter who, like, even if it's an interesting question to ask. I think if the title of like a talk is, will this solve the information paradox? Like, no, is a safer answer.
So I'm going to just invite you to at least say, oh, sorry, Bill, you wanted to add to it.
Yeah, comment.
Sure, go ahead.
I think one of the things to remember is black hole thermodynamics is really founded on the temperature. You know, Hawking discovered that black holes radiate with a certain temperature. If you actually look at the derivation of that, there's nothing about counting of states in there. There's nothing about almost anything except almost trivial quantum field theory, you know, in these completely classical backgrounds. And the background has almost nothing to do with giving you the temperature, except perhaps for the horizon and the behavior of the quantum fields near the horizon. But again, that doesn't seem to have anything to do with statistical mechanics and so forth. And so it becomes, you know, for many people, it's the entropy of black holes that has been the sort of foundation. And yet when we look at the history, it's the temperature. And if the temperature, you know, which is in a sense in the usual statistical mechanics, a derived quantity, if the temperature really has nothing to do with the usual statistical mechanics, it's really hard to see, you know, how the usual statistical mechanic notions of thermodynamics play any role in black hole thermodynamics. And I think that's a tension that one should at least keep in mind whenever one's thinking about black holes.
I mean, the thing that puzzles me with black hole thermodynamics is a lot of the techniques that we use when we're computing quantities are essentially classical, and yet an H-bar is in all of these formulae. So, yeah, it is quite a puzzle. I just wanted to just ask for your first thought on this, and then we'll bring it out more openly. Yeah, sorry, I should have passed it over. About, it's really, I think this theme came up in more than one question, and it's about really near horizon physics. You mentioned that you were talking about the link of near horizon physics with what you saw asymptotically, but do we think it's important to better understand near horizon physics?
Yeah, I mean, so personally, I find it interesting just to even try to like move the story in from like, say, null infinity with my asymptotic symmetries and S matrix into the bulk in some sort of like causal diamond. And in particular, even if I try to be agnostic about whether the black hole is going to evaporate, I could be worried about, say, the region outside of some sort of like, I guess, static black hole. And in that case, I would want to be able to kind of glue whatever I'm talking about in, and so that's a natural boundary that's there, and a lot of the structure that I would normally study at infinity, I'd have there. And we kind of import, like Carolian physics was, I think, first applied to the near horizon region, and we're using that to understand flat space holography. So I think it's interesting.
Any thoughts, Ian? I'm trying to, if people don't volunteer, I'm going to keep picking on them. Of near horizon physics?
I don't hear near horizon physics. Ah.
Okay. So there was a great question. I want to go back to analog systems. Now I can't find it, but it was a...
make it up.
Well, no, because it was so nicely phrased about essentially... So is the point of analog gravity to learn or to confirm?
Well, what do you want to learn about, right? I mean, I think you get to learn about analog systems is cool. Come on, like tabletop experiments are fun in their own right. Yeah.
As with all experiments, it's both. I think we've learned a lot, and both from the theory thinking about analog gravity as to how, you know, what is the origin of this rather mysterious phenomenon around black holes. For example, one lesson that at least I have learned, I don't know whether or not the community has, is that it really is a low frequency phenomenon, that it doesn't really care about what's going on up at those ultra high frequencies, that whatever is going on there always gives the same answer. Now I can make up systems in which that's not true, so that, you know, it's not 100% lesson, if you will, but that's one of the lessons that I think I've learned from it. And it's also, I think, really nice that, you know, one can actually do experiments on this. I never imagined back in my youth that one would ever be able to do experiments with black holes, and especially not experiments, in my backyard, more or less.
I think your famous paper that started this subject off and ends with a very disparaging comment about the conditions you would need for this experiment to work.
Yes, well, experimentalists are amazing people. I keep being astounded at how they can do things that you just sort of can't ever imagine them doing. And I think Einstein had that problem as well. I mean, 1916, he predicted gravity waves, and throughout his life, well, sometimes he even doubted that they existed, but certainly he never doubted that they would never be observed.
So we do have quite a few questions on the interior of the black hole, space-time, and I'm going to just turn to you, Rob, and maybe paraphrase. I know there's been sort of recent advances in ADS-CFT about maybe looking behind the horizon with entanglement. Any comments? Sorry, I keep throwing all these ones to you.
But there have been. I'm going to throw a new word out. One of the concepts we learned about from our friends in quantum information is an idea called quantum complexity, which you can think of basically as the quantum folks making very precise the question, how hard is it to do something? And it's actually a lesson we learned that, in fact, entanglement entropy, which was a favorite diagnostic, was not so good at geometric diagnostic to tell us about black hole interiors, but perhaps this idea of complexity was a better one. So there has been progress there. I'm not sure where to take the question, though.
I think it's more just, for people who don't know about these areas, it's quite interesting that people are actually really thinking about these
questions. No, we are, and it's a very different setup, but it's really asking, or what it really, in some sense, it's like the experiments. It makes you think about things in a different way, and what it's doing is, as a general relativist, it's drawing my attention or the community's attention to a new class of observables that we may not have thought about before. Mm. Things like extremal surfaces, and it's asking what the properties of those are. Because I'm also the string theorist, I'm asking, well, in this context of ADS-CFT, what would the meaning of these new observables be? How would I interpret them in terms of the non-gravitational theory? And that's drawing in ideas and perspectives from the quantum information community.
So I think, again, this is a question which is of interest both on the sort of black hole theory side as well as on the experimental side, and I'll just leave it to whoever wants to chip in. Do you expect quantum effects to show up or be visible at horizon scales? And if so, why? And if not, why? I can see Bill's itching to talk. So,
well, if they're really, really tiny horizons, then I guess yes. But if one is thinking of using the black hole horizon telescope to see quantum effects, I think that's the wrong place to look. Mm. My feeling is that horizons are no different than anywhere else. So, in fact, there are an infinite number of horizons running through this room right now. These are Rindler horizons. And so we could look in this room for those kinds of effects, but I don't think that would be a very good idea. So I'm not.
We don't hear Mr. Unruh. Is there someone who can say Mr. Unruh to put the microphone close to his mouth, please?
The voice of God said
what? Your microphone on.
You're having trouble hearing me?
Yes, thank you, William. We are listening to you now.
That's usually not a problem for me.
We have people perhaps online, so we do need to be
have people on?
Online.
Ah, yes, true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for large horizons, you know, solar mass horizons or the kinds of black holes that we've actually seen exist out there, I think the chances of seeing something quantum there, even something as, you know, even something as, if you will, basic as the thermal radiation from horizons, well, a solar mass black hole has a temperature of 10 to the minus 6 Kelvin, and that's immersed in a universe whose temperature on the whole is 3 degree Kelvin or much higher than that. And so seeing 10 to the minus 6 Kelvin is pretty hopeless, I think. So I don't think that's the place that one will need to look at. I don't have a good answer as to where one should look, however, so.
Can I ask the analog gravity people? I do wonder sometimes, if you produced an analog black hole producing Hawking radiation, is it not possible that the analog horizon itself could have fluctuations? And if it has fluctuations, then its distribution would be described by some kind of Boltzmann term, you know, e to the minus entropy. Is there any chance we'll ever get quantum fluctuations in the horizon of an analog black hole? Is what I'm...
There's certainly back action from the thermal radiation on the horizon of an analog black hole. This thing emits radiation, emits sound waves, and those sound waves will certainly affect exactly where that horizon is. The problem with a black hole is that the temperature of the black hole at the black hole horizon is very large, Planck scale or higher. So if that does produce jiggles in the horizon, those jiggles are going to be large. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Pity.
But I, you know, just like Einstein, we'll never see gravity waves.
I think there's a question from the audience there. Oh dear.
First microphone accident of the conference.
The right reflects.
Actually, I have a question as to whether the whole quantum simulation idea is doomed or not, partly because Rob Myers is on the panel. So Rob Myers is a string theorist. And if we really need string theory, if I'm honest, forgive me if I'm misstating the facts, but if we need string theory to describe the details of black holes and black hole horizons, surely these analog systems do not need string theory to describe them. I mean, we're talking about ordinary quantum mechanics in Bose-Einstein condensates and so on. So is string theory just a clever set of tools that are revealing something universal that perhaps we can find also in ordinary quantum mechanics, atomic systems and so on? Or do we really need these? Is string theory getting to some physical essence? Or can we rely on symmetries and phase transitions and so on that make the analogs useful? Is that a fair question?
The question is for you, but I would say it's not fair, but go for it.
Well, there are many different levels, though. I mean, we heard about, exciting experiments where perhaps we're seeing teleportation across an Einstein-Rosen bridge. I think it was actually Ian's comment this morning. You know, one of the things the experiments make you do is they make you think about the physics and what the questions you can ask, how to really translate those to the real world. I think that was the comment. And so I think there is a role for the experiments that it helps us sharpen our understanding and the way we think about things. And it's also a marvelous playground where, you know, by challenging the experimentalists with these questions, they, you know, they're developing their techniques, their, you know, their platforms to really push them to the edge of what's possible. A lot of the, you know, what we said before was black hole thermodynamics. I mean, that's what Bill was saying. Where's the statistical mechanics? Why do, you know, I can just do simple calculations. You know, I discover various properties about horizons. I think, though, for example, you know, I'm going to go back to the entropy because that's one of my favorite formulas. You know, it may be, you know, that was a proposal that you know, it has nothing to do with statistical physics. On the other hand, there are examples I know of where you can make that match. And so it emboldens you then to go on to think about other systems where, you know, instead of having weird, extremal black holes carrying, you know, maximum amount of charge, you know, can we make similar interpretations of black hole entropy there as a, you know, a statistical mechanical? So I think there are a lot of questions that you know, just rely on perhaps symmetries or basic principles, but there are challenging or at least interesting questions where we need a deeper theory, something that is really telling us about that UV physics, to answer them. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Right.
So this is, I think it's an interesting question, although I think it's probably one the whole room should engage in. In your opinion, what is the most promising analog system? We'll get Bill on that one first, see if he's got an opinion.
Probably Bose-Einstein condensates. One of the main reasons is they're cold. And any of the analog systems, you know, every time I do it, I get figures like 10 to the minus 12 Kelvin. Well, I remember giving a talk in which I said, you know, and this is impossible. And one of the members of the audience, Mark Raisin, who's a BEC experimentalist at Austin, put up his hand and said, well, you know, I think I can do 10 to the minus 11 in my lab right now. And I just, so I think that's an important thing that one can get at. The problem is that I keep asking the experimentalist to please make me a Bose-Einstein condensate that, you know, is really like a dinner plate, you know, tens of centimeters across instead of these silly 100 these tiny little 100 microns that they keep talking about. But that's probably the area that I would say is the most hopeful. For seeing some of these effects, and is the one place in which we have, you know, the experiments of Jeff Steinhauer in Israel has come closest to sort of arguing that he has seen the radiation produced by a horizon in the Bose-Einstein condensate.
Nobody wants
to chase other things.
Nobody wants to come back on. Oh yes, we've got Jörg at the front.
So I think that would be a good exercise, but for that it would require every system to cut out all the bullshit that you put on there to get on the yellow press front pages. Really say what he can do. Because I think many of the things that are done in experiments are completely overclaimed. Yeah, to cut out all the, you know, just say what you really do, and not, you know, go three steps of interpretation and then say what you do in this interpretation. Then you can start thinking about it, which system is better, which system is not. Because I think that a lot of the things that we see are very much, you put a lot of interpretation in there then. And just go and say, you know, say the cool physics you can do and let the interpretation come from somebody else. I think that should be the rule.
Now I can see somebody this else? Is going to be the hot potato question. Unless does anybody else want to come in on this? Yes, Cisco.
Jörg, could you pass it?
Nice spin. I just wanted to point out that even if one is the most promising, we all benefit from having a diverse set of analogs,
I
think.
I agree with that entirely.
Can I add one thing?
Yep.
I want to ask, if you had an infinitely or substantially more powerful and accurate quantum computer than what exists now, what would you want to know about quantum gravity if that, you know, was your simulator talking to people that maybe are thinking more about the quantum gravity side?
I'm completely stumped. But we did hear mention of quantum information, quantum complexity earlier from someone on the panel. You might.
I think we need to have a ball, instead of the microphone, it's like.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the hot potato question. Yeah.
So I think that, the technology is advancing and it's advancing very rapidly. I'm not sure, and it provides a terrific playground for theoretical physicists, for everybody in this building. I'm not sure the first questions that'll be answered are questions about black holes or cosmology or that. But you're pressing me on what can we learn about black holes? What are the experiments to do? Some of the interesting, well, we heard about one, but the black holes that we think about or often think about are these eternal black holes with the Einstein-Rosen bridge. And so more experiments around, quantum complexity is really talking about sort of connecting the two sides. And so I don't have a precise experiment, but there must be more interesting experiments about connecting those two sides, whether it's, teleporting across that's a very special thing, but, even the idea of, throwing stuff inside your black hole and blowing up in a time. Okay, that's a bad example, but having something exciting happen inside the horizon and what are the implications of that? Or how do I understand that? Or see the effect of that in perhaps Hawking radiation or elsewhere. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay, I'm going to use that as an excuse. Oh, Silke, that's every time I've got a segue.
I have a question for Rob and Sabrina. In terms of condensed matter holography, what would you say is the most promising experimental system realization or perhaps most exciting thing to do as well?
Could people hear that question, by the way? No, could you repeat it?
The whole question.
Yeah, because it's not.
I wanted to know. Actually, I'm going to use that as the answer.
Could
so
you
as,
repeat
as
it?
The string theorists who are theorists, by the way.
But can
right?
we repeat the question exactly. because they couldn't? Yeah.
That's my answer.
Oh, sorry.
Is that I would turn to you guys and say, what is the most promising condensed matter or other experiment or analog system for us?
Thanks, yeah. It's just I couldn't hear it over the speakers, so. Okay, so I was about to segue into a question that Ian wanted to explore, but I think anyone who's a Star Trek...
wanted to answer the question.
I'm going to come and ask you the question afterwards. I didn't quite understand what it was, so I'll...
She wants to know what we're most excited about, and I don't know enough to know, so I'm asking them what we should be most excited about.
Conan's metaholography, in terms of experimental...
So you're saying, what can I do in... Or give me a condensed matter experiment I can do to learn about holography or to interpret it in a holographic way. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for you right now.
Clearly ignorant of this field, but can I ask what you think about these ideas of simulating this so-called SYK model, which is supposed to be holographic to a black hole? Simulating this on a chip, and we had one talk at the meeting already about this. I mean, is it true that if you were to create the SYK model on a chip, in some sense you've created a black hole, because it is the jewel of a black hole, and it's got entropy even. Is this a first statement, or I'm just talking nonsense?
Or both.
I'll say yes, it would, because it's no, but the whole idea of, you know, unfortunately I don't have a third hand, but what is ADS-CFT? It's nothing but a dictionary. It says there's one set of physical phenomena, and there are two languages with which I can use to describe that set of phenomena. And what you're saying is, well, you want to have a physical realization of this language or the entries here with this language. And so if I understand the dictionary properly, then what your experiment is doing over here can be interpreted in terms of black hole phenomena.
That's a question.
Matt, was that an answer to your question?
Only if it requires better quantum computers.
Yeah, well, you do it better with better quantum computers. So.
Yeah, but I would say one of the fascinating things about Maria's talk was that she was able to produce some interesting results without actually building that complicated S. No, for me, that's fascinating. It's like saying, you know, you could produce a dictionary that translates between all possible languages, and that would require a huge number of resources. But if we focus our attention on, the translation between, in Canada, it's between
English and French.
You know, that takes far fewer resources, and there's a lot of useful information in there. And of course, that's an analog, but I just find it fascinating that you know, hidden in that relatively simple system that she described, there is all sorts of interesting physics that has a very specific interpretation in terms of gravitational phenomena.
Okay, moving on. This is a question that I think Ian was interested in, but basically if you're a Star Trek fan, you might like it as well. Can we travel through a wormhole? Go on, Ian.
Okay, I think we like to think we're solving important questions in, you know, fundamental physics, but sometimes it's nice to have a bit of fun and to ask, you know, can we do something really weird, like have a traversable wormhole in the sense that I understand this is one which you could send an astronaut through? I think there's a serious side to asking these questions, and that's if you did think of some kind of model with general relativity at a traversable wormhole, then you have to answer various questions like, you know, how do you deal with the singularities? You know, how do you actually do quantum theory on such a background? So I think there's a serious side to this as a sort of thought experiment. But it's also the fun side of physics, right? We need to entertain ourselves sometimes. You know, so I think it's enjoyable to try and ask questions like this. How would you have to push the laws of physics in order to make that rotating black hole a traversable wormhole?
Does anybody want to come in on this from the... Oh, yes, Jörg. Sorry, I think
one first has to ask the question, can I teleport a person? And if I can't answer that, I can't answer the other one.
To understand which?
Can I teleport a person? Can I quantum teleport a person? Yeah? And that's probably... You know, from complexity, I think will require too many resources.
Just for fun, those in the audience who think eventually you will be able to beam me up, Scotty, put your hands up now.
You mean literally or in a metaverse?
Yeah, literally. Those who think we'll never be able to teleport consciousness, put your hands up.
I think there's a third question.
Okay, give them a third option.
Third option is like, okay, will Facebook, and I guess who's competing? Is Apple now with their little headset, be able to let us live in our little daydream metaverse where all the laws of physics are whatever we want them to be?
Okay, well, that was really interesting, actually. I think on the first two about teleportation, there was a sort of majority who thought you wouldn't be able to. And I think that's just an interesting, my reason for thinking maybe not would be, I think consciousness is something a little more elusive, but... Anyway, that was a good question, Ian.
As a physicist, it could be quite crazy.
Can I ask Ian, though, when I heard you speaking, I thought of it more as a traditional old school wormhole where we're talking about negative energy densities and creating...
Violating energy
conditions. And so it's not clear that has anything to do with teleportation. That's another, version of it that has come up recently, but... I wanted to point out there are other...
Some suggestions quite recently that this impenetrable barrier inside a rotating hole might not be quite such a bad singularity, and you might be able to go through it relatively painlessly.
Well, certainly, Thorne's wormhole in his movie, which is basically the Schwarzschild metric where you set G naught not equal to 1. It's a fascinating thing. I mean, those of you that teach general relativity, it's worth sitting down and really studying that because there's all kinds of fascinating physics there, including you realize that all of these pictures of black holes that you see everywhere, starting with Larry Smarr of the wastebasket, are complete and utter nonsense. The amount of negative energy that you need tension, I think it is, but not that much negative energy in order to make that kind of a wormhole, to have that kind of a wormhole. I don't know how you would make it, but I've said everything I want on that.
So I think moving to sort of thinking about quantum black holes, I think I'm going to just ask each of the panel in turn, what to you is a quantum black hole? Starting with Rob, what is a quantum black hole? That was the question. What is a quantum black hole?
I'll say any black hole in our universe is a quantum black hole. I live in a quantum world or a quantum universe, and so all of those black holes are quantum black holes.
Okay.
And I copy that answer.
Okay, that's two. Ian?
I mean, it's so long since Hawking produced his famous result on black hole evaporation that I don't know. We've been rather blasé about it. It was an amazing discovery, and one that's been extremely influential, I think, in the development in fundamental physics. So black holes aren't just quantum. They have these effects like thermal radiation. I think that's an amazing thing, Bill.
Bill.
I mean, to some extent, I agree with the answer, except to some extent, I also don't. Because I suspect that whoever asked it meant a black hole, a quantum black hole in which the quantum mechanics is actually important to, you know, is observable, that one can actually make measurements on it, which demonstrate that it differs from, you know, just a solution, what one would expect from a solution of Einstein's equation, that you get some real quantum phenomenon going in it. But in that case, I think one really needs a small black hole, and small black holes seem to be in really short supply, never mind on Earth, but in the universe. Even to get 3-degree temperature, you need a black hole that's, I don't know what, smaller than Jupiter, I mean, smaller in mass than Jupiter. I don't know how to, you know.
Have cosmologists in the room. Could there have been very small black holes in the early universe? Could they have left distinct signatures in whatever we see today? So you got your phone over there, Matt.
We don't know that.
Well, but they're very constrained. Yeah, I mean, you know, open any paper by Bernard Carr, for example, and there's, you know, most of the interesting mass range of primordial black holes has got some constraint on it from cosmology somewhere, either because it heats things up at the wrong time, and we'd see that, or it interferes with processes that we know happen, so it can't be that. But if they're really tiny mass, then probably not, because that happened at such an early time that we don't measure anything related to the early times. Can't happen too late, because we would see it, or they can't be too numerous if it happens too late. They could exist. I know.
Mm-hmm. Or challenge.
And then a related question, can we probe the quantumness of space-time through analogs? So do we need the real experiments, I guess, is what is being asked.
We need the real experiments.
Well, of course you're going to say that, but do we think we can get there?
I mean, as always, analogs are good for a lot of things and for understanding. For if you will, reality, I think they leave something to be desired. So I think we need, you know, to really talk about quantum mechanics, I think we need to do experiments that are quantum and involve gravity directly, not analogs.
Cisco, I think, has a comment there. Yeah, couldn't you pass the green cube?
Just to play devil's advocate slightly there, I feel like it still hasn't been ruled out that it's possible to find special regimes where we have a dynamical analogy. It's certainly not easy and not possible in general, but I feel like this is still possible, and it's still a possible way of seeing some quantum gravity effects in analogs.
Did that come through on the speakers? Yeah.
Good.
Never sure. Different. And then again, continuing, I guess, I'm just trying to keep some of the analogs. I think people are quite interested in the role analogs might have in discussing singularities, you know, whether there has to be some sort of analog cosmic censorship. It's an intriguing thought.
Yeah, well, as I said before, one of the things that analogs don't do for you is to model Einstein's equations. So certainly you can get something that looks like analogs. Well, you know, the base of Niagara Falls just down the road here sure looks like a singularity if you're on a little boat. But I don't think one would want to draw any lessons from that to gravity or quantum gravity or singularities in gravity. I mean, one of the things about analog black holes, as far as I know, there's not even many of the theorems that got proven in the 70s. For example, that the surface gravity on a black hole is constant on a stationary or static black hole. The surface gravity is constant, so that the temperature is the same all over it. I don't believe that there's any such theorem as far as horizons in an analog system. So you could imagine having something which had different temperatures all over the surface that formed the analog black hole. The proof of that those theorems really relied on general relativity, and you know, specific structures of general relativity, which the fluid equations, the Navier-Stokes equations, simply don't have those. So you know, and certainly cosmic censorship doesn't. Whatever it is, I mean, it hasn't been. Anyway, yeah. That's not going to be something that one can prove for analog systems.
And then just to wrap up, I'll follow Matt's example. So each in turn, if you were gifted one thing that you could learn about black holes or discover about black holes, so you have one question that will be answered. What would it be, Rob? What would you like to know?
Well, I guess it came up before that, you know, the great thing about black holes is that it predicts the demise of general relativity at that singularity. And so what is the true physics of the singularity?
Thank you.
I would say something more practical, like how do I understand it in celestial holography so I can have a paper?
That's fine. That's absolutely fine. Ian?
I'd kind of like to know whether these string theorists and holographers are right, whether the evolution of quantum states, the evaporating black hole, is unitary or not.
And Bill?
Well, instead, I'll give one of my fears. One of my fears is that if, you know, we could come back in 200 years and assuming people still were interested in physics and general relativity and astronomy, and they had actually managed to produce a theory of quantum gravity, whether that theory would be as weird or weirder than quantum mechanics seemed to people in 1925 and still seemed to most people. There are some people that feel, you know, like singularities, well, quantum gravity will smooth out all the singularities and make the world just look like, you know, what Aristotle thought it was, or something like that, you know, that we will manage to go back to.
Need to put the
very simply understandable world. And I think it'll be a world that is so different that they will look back at us and say, boy, don't I wish I lived in the beginning of the 21st century when everything was so simple.
Well, thank you. So let's thank our panelists. And of course, a thank you to the audience for the questions and participation. So.